the best way to protect students in the classroom? Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect, and I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. And just ahead on the show this morning, arming teachers or safety assistants in schools. Local parents are suing to try to stop that. What do you think? Join the conversation. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, how you can dine out for life this week. Plus, why Duval Draft Night is going to the dogs. Literally, we'll tell you about it. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, local parents are suing to stop the use of armed safety assistants in the Duval County Public Schools. A judge will evaluate their complaint on Thursday. At the same time, a measure that would arm Florida teachers is moving ahead in Tallahassee. Now, as this debate over safety in the classroom continues, the Florida Education Association is holding a news conference in the Capitol this morning to discuss the funding of our public schools. We start the hour this morning with education news as Andrew Spahr, Vice President of the Florida Education Association, FEA, joins us now by phone with a closer look at all of these matters. Andrew, good to have you on the show. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for having me.
And what do you think about not just school funding, but the proposal to arm teachers and the local lawsuit that is fighting against the use of armed safety assistants in Jacksonville schools? Give us a call. Let us know what you think is the best way to protect your children in class. It's 549-2937 to join us, 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaNJax, and Facebook is open as well for your comments. Andrew, let's start with this local lawsuit from local parents, along with a few other groups, seeking to stop the use of armed safety assistants in the Duval County Public Schools. A judge may toss this measure out on Thursday. We're waiting to see how that goes. But the argument parents are making is that only sworn police officers should be given weapons on school campus. Where does the FEA stand on this local matter?
So clearly the whole issue of arming teachers, which I know there's the lawsuit in Jacksonville and Duval County, but it's really a statewide issue, right? I mean, every parent is wondering, you know, what's going to happen with school safety? And for us, our position is we should not do school safety on the cheap. Law enforcement officers are trained and practice on a daily basis to deal with active shooter situations or someone with a gun. Teachers and other school personnel, not so much. And so that is why we think that what the state of Florida needs to do is not do security on the cheap. We think they need to invest in our schools, and they need to make sure that every school district has the resources they need to really have a law enforcement officer on every school ground so that law enforcement is handling law enforcement issues.
And the Duval County School Board, let's be clear, they oppose arming teachers, which is a matter being taken up in Tallahassee right now, a bill that's moving through the legislative process. The school board does not want to deputize or arm school personnel. Instead, what they've hit upon is a safety assistant plan that would add armed school safety assistants to every county elementary school. There are already resource officers at middle and high schools throughout Duval County. And so, Andrew, you know, Duval County is going with this solution partially due to funding, because the resources aren't there to have a sworn police officer on every school campus. And so you're pressing the legislature to better fund public schools, not just in terms of this matter of school safety, which is so critical, but you want a major reinvestment in public schools up and down the ledger. That is a tough sell in Tallahassee, isn't it, given that the momentum is going amongst Florida legislators more toward investing in private and charter schools. How does the FEA respond to the mindset among the state legislature when it comes to this issue?
So the FEA and our 140,000 plus members across the state of Florida truly believe in the hope and the promise of public education. And so what we continue to fight for is this notion that we need to invest in our students. We need to fund their future. And the reason we say that is look at what's happening in public education in the state of Florida, right? Florida ranks among the 10 worst states in the nation in funding for our public schools. Our teacher pay ranks 46th in the nation in teacher pay out of the 50 states that we have, I'll point out. And then you look at things like our paraprofessionals, our bus drivers, our cafeteria workers all make wages that are below the poverty level across the state. And so these are real issues, and it's leading to a crisis in our public schools because of this lack of funding. The Department of Education in the state of Florida actually projects that at the end of this year, there will be 10,000-plus teacher vacancies in the state of Florida. There are not enough people going into the teaching profession to fill all of those vacancies. And so this issue on school safety, this issue on the teacher shortage, this issue on making sure that our students have the best public education they deserve in the state of Florida comes back to one central issue. And that issue is that Florida lawmakers continue to ignore our public schools and continue to ignore, quite honestly, what the voters have said in funding our schools. Voters across Florida in 19 school districts this last election alone voted to tax themselves at a higher rate to fund our public schools because Florida lawmakers have failed to do that. And now Florida lawmakers are trying to figure out a way to divert that money away from the public schools. So this is a big issue. It's all interconnected in our mind because so many people in the state of Florida, 2.7 million students, attend our neighborhood public schools, and we think they're worth more than what the Florida legislature is stepping up and doing.
Governor Ron DeSantis has proposed greatly increasing funding for public education in Florida. How do you see his budget proposal?
Well, the issue with the governor's budget, and he did increase, actually the Senate has the best proposal out there. The Senate has proposed a $1.1 billion increase. We still don't think that goes far enough because all that $1.1 billion will do is move Florida out of the bottom 10. It doesn't get us that much closer to the national average on funding for our schools. But the governor's proposal, which is problematic in a couple of ways, is that he allocates a lot of that money. He's not allowing local communities, the school districts, the teachers, the staff, the parents, to make decisions on what to do with that money. He actually allocates a huge chunk of that money to specific programs like bonuses for teachers, which we don't believe solves the challenge we have in recruiting the best teachers. When you pay so low, putting a bonus into place doesn't address the issue that so many people are using for not coming into the teaching profession, the lack of respect and the lack of pay.
All right, let's go to some calls now as local parents sue to try to stop the use of armed safety assistance in Duval County Public Schools. A judge will hear their complaint on Thursday. Teachers are holding a news conference in Tallahassee this morning, meanwhile, over the issue of school funding. What are your thoughts as kids get ready to get out of school for the summer? Just 6 more weeks to go in this school year, roughly. It's 549-2937. As we talk education on the show this morning, Mark is in St. Augustine. Hey, Mark. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. You kind of brought up the second point for me, so I have a question and hopefully it may be a topic for another call. The topic for the other call would be my understanding of school funding. It largely comes from property taxes. And with a lot of people moving into Florida, especially retirees, I would imagine that you have significantly more revenues coming in the form of property taxes, even though those new residents don't really have kids that are in those schools. And I'd be curious about that for another topic, maybe on another show. Mm-hmm. But as far as the school safety is concerned, instead of arming the teachers, which I understand that is an approach that could be done, it would seem to me from a simplicity standpoint, you know, it might not be easy, but it might be a simple answer, and that is, much like you have in courthouses or even at the airport, have the kids come in and put their backpack on a X-ray machine and let them scan those things when the kids come and go and reduce the number of entry points to the school. That, you know, then the word gets out that, hey, you're going to be scanned whenever you come in here. And I know that would be a hassle in some ways, but I don't hear that option discussed as much as, arming the teachers, which
sure,
that's the option they go with, and I'm okay with that one.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks for that. And, you know, all Duval County high schools will have walk-through metal detectors and hand wands to check students with weapons. That's part of the plan anyway. They're packaged for school safety improvements. They also want to buy security cameras. So, Andrew with FEA, That is moving forward in Duval County, although, of course, in Duval County, there's another big issue that we need to touch on, school infrastructure. We have the oldest school buildings in the state of Florida, many of them over 50 years old, and the Duval County School Board needs nearly $2 billion to improve aging infrastructure and school campuses around Jacksonville. And so the funding crunch here is going all kinds of different ways. They've got to figure out how to pay adequate teacher salaries. School security is expensive. And on top of that, they need to raise an enormous amount of money for school infrastructure. It's a big list.
Yeah, Melissa, I think Mark made a couple of good points, right? I mean, one, I just want to touch on the property tax piece. So the state of Florida continues to do what they call a rollback, which means the school districts do not get any new money from property taxes, even though millage rates may go up and so on. So there's actually limited revenue coming from the property taxes because of how Florida structures it. And sales tax is also another big way that public schools get their money through the state legislature. In terms of this notion of metal detectors and x-rays and scanners and other measures, there are a host of issues that the legislature is looking at that came out of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Commission on ways to ensure security. We should do everything we possibly can to ensure the safety of our students without turning our schools into institutions that are more like prison cells than classrooms of learning, right? We don't want to lose that. No parent wants to send their kids to an institution that is not warm and inviting. And so that's the balance that has to be struck, right, as we talk about these things. And you're right, a lot of our school buildings in the state of Florida are very old. They're aging rapidly, and they were built for a different time. And so some of it is in the way we design schools and should retrofit our schools to ensure that we have inviting campuses that are truly secure. And what has not been mentioned so far that is so vitally important is the mental health services that our students receive. So many school districts across the state have cut back on guidance, our school counselors and school psychologists and school social workers during the recession, and they haven't been able to restore them. And arguably, we probably need more of those kinds of services today than ever before, because our kids are growing up in a different world. And with social media and a lot of the online things that happen with students, we need to ensure that students have success. And in order for them to be successful, we have to look at the whole child and really think about, are we really serving the child the way we need to with the appropriate supports so that it's not all falling on just the teacher and that the parents and family have the support they need?
Daryl is in St. Augustine. Hey, Daryl, go ahead. Thanks for holding.
Yeah, you know, this doesn't happen anywhere else on the entire planet, you know, that has any kind of gun regulation. So since we're not going to have any kind of gun regulation, I say we go with what the NRA says, which is, you know, the only thing that stops a bad kid with a gun is a good kid with a gun. So every kid that comes in, give them gun training, and give them a gun, and let them all sit there, because it's obvious that the authorities are not going to do anything to protect our children.
Are you saying that in a satirical way, Daryl? Is that a joke,
sort of. Yes, okay. Yes, and sort of, because they're absurd to do this. I mean, it doesn't happen any other place in the world except here. And our idea is more guns. It's just disgusting that our leaders and, frankly, the police and authorities that we spend billions of dollars on, who can't stop it. So if they can't stop it with billions of dollars on, you know, law enforcement all over the world, all over the country, then, you know, it's pretty much the guns, dude. Add more guns, you're going to get more killing.
Daryl, thanks for the call. Andrew, you know, I have two emails sitting in front of me here on my laptop that lay out the split on the public opinion on this issue. Here's one listener who writes, please find me any parent whose child is out of school and somebody is with a gun killing children who turns around and says, when somebody comes in with a gun to stop the killer, please stop and wait for the cops to get there first. Do they care whether it was a janitor or a cook in the cafeteria or even a librarian that can stop the killer? Here's another email. If we continue on the path of spending precious resources on protection from theoretical threats, our educational system will continue to lag behind other countries. Less guns is the obvious answer, not more guns. I have known gun owners with a lifetime experience who came close to death because of one mistake. Sanity must prevail and the NRA must be subjugated. Okay. So that really, I think it, in a nutshell, shows you how divisive this issue is, Andrew Spahr, with FEA, whether you believe hardening schools with more weapons is the answer or whether you see that as simply the exact opposite of what should be done. You know, and there's no middle ground, I don't think, when you talk about something as emotional as this for parents and children in the classroom, you know?
So Melissa, let me say this. You know, I think for us, we're not looking at it from a Second Amendment perspective, which I know there could be a whole conversation around that. But let's talk about this. I said before, this whole idea of security on the cheap. There was actually an FBI report that's been done that talks about this notion of arming teachers. And they say there is no evidence. And in fact, there's a lot of concern around this notion of arming teachers in terms of increasing protection, right? The other thing is we're putting teachers in a lose-lose situation. This notion that if you have a teacher who has limited training, who carries a weapon, is going to be able to run to a scene of an active shooter and take out that active shooter. Let's talk about that from a logical standpoint, right? First, we're saying to that teacher who's in a classroom with students, right, with kids, what are they supposed to do at that point? Are they supposed to stay with their kids and protect the kids they're assigned to, or are they supposed to run after an active shooter who may be down the hallway? In the unlikely event that that happens, and we should always underscore, it's very unlikely. You know, we've seen a lot of it. We've seen way too much of it. One incident of an active school shooting is way too much. We've got to address the underlying issues there. But you're actually asking a teacher to make that split second decision. If the teacher goes after the active shooter, they were wrong for keeping their class from leaving their class unattended. If they stay with the class, they were wrong for not going after the active shooter. It's a lose-lose proposition for teachers to even think of putting them in that situation. If there's an armed law enforcement officer on campus, then there's an armed law enforcement officer to respond immediately to that. This isn't an either-or situation in my mind. This is about doing what is right for the safety and security of our schools, which includes our students and the people who work there. And I think that often gets overlooked, right? This is not an issue of having more people with guns is going to solve the problem, because the FBI is saying that's probably not true. There's no research to support that. This is about making sure that you have the best people in place who are trained and able to do that. You're asking teachers to pull a weapon, and teachers' first thing is to help. That's what they go into teaching for, to help kids, to help people, to make a difference. And saying to them, now pull a weapon and shoot someone in the unlikely event that that comes to happen is again, not only a lose-lose proposition, it puts that teacher in a position that creates a conflict for them. And so that's not really where we should be going. We should be going to people who are trained to do this work, and we shouldn't do security on the cheap.
Also, let me ask you as a follow-up, the majority of teachers in Florida don't want this change. At the same time, the commission that was formed to study the mass shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School put forth several recommendations, and this was one of them. So for lawmakers that are pushing this, what's your response to the legislators who support this idea, this notion, saying they're following on the recommendations of the MSD commission?
Yeah, so the Marjory Stoneman Douglas Commission had a very long list of recommendations, and the lawmakers have not taken up every recommendation that the MSD Commission has proposed. But they've taken up this one, and so the question has to be why. Why is this the issue that they think is the most important factor to securing our schools, when in fact there's no evidence to support that? And we just keep going back to, because even some superintendents have said this, superintendents are saying we don't have the money to put a law enforcement officer in every school. And since we don't have the money to put a law enforcement officer in every school, we need an alternative. And this is the alternative they've come up with. And that, to me, is security on the cheap. And I think our kids are worth way more than that. So state lawmakers, in my opinion, need to step up and make sure that the funding exists. Again, it's another reason why we're more favorable with the Senate budget, because what the Senate has done with under the leadership of President Galvano is he's actually said, hey, let's make sure there's more money there for school security. And so the Senate actually, in their budget proposal, and we don't know where it's going to go at the end of these next 2 weeks, but the Senate has said, let's put more money into school security. Again, not enough, but they're moving in the right direction. And I think that's where the pressure needs to go.
Let me ask you as a follow-up, Andrew. At Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, there was an armed officer there in Broward
Correct.
County. He was afraid to go inside. He was
yep.
afraid to go in and stop the carnage. That
yep.
And that has been seized upon by gun control advocates who say that the argument shouldn't be about adding guns and adding security, but rather reducing access to weapons that can kill a large amount of people in a very short amount of time. Because what we do know about mass shootings in schools is that the young men, and it's always been young men who do this horrible thing, they commit these horrific crimes in a very short space of time, a few minutes. And they use high capacity magazines so that they can do that. And so what's the FEA's position on, you know, the activists that have rallied in Tallahassee, the March for Our Lives students from South Florida, Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America, and others who've argued that the legislature should not be so much hardening the targets, but rather reducing access to these weapons?
So I think, you know, again, we don't see this as a Second Amendment kind of issue. We see this as an issue of making sure that our students have the mental health services they need, because what we always hear when we see these mass shootings is the issue of mental health. And in a lot of cases, these shootings in our schools have been done by students or former students, right? And they are students or former students who yes, have had access to weapons, and so there should be a conversation around that. But not only have they had access to weapons, they've had signs of mental health issues, and they haven't been able to get the services and support they need. So let's really make sure as a society that we're doubling down and tripling down on this notion of supporting the mental health of every child and every adult in this country and in the state to get what they need. And then let's take reasonable, common sense security measures to make sure that we do limit access into our schools, that we have trained law enforcement. And yeah, there's no such thing as a perfect world in the sense that every law enforcement officer is going to make a decision the right way. And the same holds true for teachers. In fact, but the fact remains that law enforcement officers who are armed and adequately trained are more likely to deal effectively in that situation than someone who is not have that level of training or that expertise. And the bottom line is my 15-year-old daughter, who's in 10th grade in public school in Volusia County, said it best, and that was, it just seems common sense that teachers teach and law enforcement officers enforce the law.
And Mitch writes on our Facebook page, thank you, thank you, thank you for emphasizing the urgent need for more mental health care. This is the missing puzzle piece in the conversation that will do a world of good for our kids.
Absolutely.
All right, let's go to Susan. She's in Mandarin. Hi, Susan. Good morning, Susan. Yes. You're on the air.
Yes. My understanding is that the Florida Senate is going to be voting on SB 7030, and the Democrats already tried to get the Republicans to take out the part of allowing arming of teachers. So I wonder if our alternative at this point is to ask them to amend that bill so that the schools can use the money like they want. I believe lines 1183 to 1186 says that the money that they're allocating can only be used to for these school guardians. And why can't they amend that bill and say each school district can decide how to use that money like they want? And the other troublesome thing that I'm finding about that bill is that even if each school district decides not to arm their teachers, then the charter schools can arm their teachers. So I'm wondering, what is the taxpayer's liability if a charter school decides to arm their teachers and some accident happens with a gun? Will the taxpayers have to pay for that? Well, I mean, because there'll be a lawsuit, right? And who will be responsible for that? Will it be the charter school administrator?
Yeah.
Or the taxpayers.
Yeah, and that brings...
Oh, and I love the inspiration of what your guest is saying.
That sure.
Hopeful if he could get his way.
All right, Susan, thanks. What about that question, Andrew?
Yeah, so thanks, Susan. It was a good question. You know, obviously the whole question of liability has not really been answered by the legislature, you know, and that's been one of the attempts to amend the bill by some Democrats in that regard. At this point, the bill is probably going to be up today. It's expected it will be voted on today, and it unfortunately, I think it's going to pass in its current form. And if that's the case, then we as community folks need to do what, like Duval County has done, and get more school districts to support this notion of we're not going to arm the teachers. That's the way I look at it, and that I think we all need to continue to come together and call on the legislature to do right, to invest in mental health, to invest in true school security, and to take reasonable steps to keep our schools as in warm and inviting, safe environments for every child who comes on our campus, because that is the basis of what we need to ensure that students are learning.
Angie in Ponte Vedra. Go ahead, Angie. What do you think?
Well, I think we're dealing with a failed war on drugs situation, and we're just doing that war on gun violence. But the question I had for Andrew is really, you know, even if the FBI says, hey, this isn't the solution, I'm just going to ask the one question. Follow the money trail. Where's the money trail? Are the legislators that I've voted in, or maybe not all, you know, are they attached to gun manufacturing companies? Are they talking to lobbyists? I mean, this is where I feel that we fail, as in not putting in a bill, hey, it's okay for you to vote for X, Y, and Z, but are you attached to any monetary influence or any monetary company that is producing and manufacturing guns? And I wanted to hear your opinion. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for that. Andrew, I know you don't want to get too far into Second Amendment issues, but what about her question?
Well, I think with anything, right? I mean, there are certainly in Tallahassee during the legislative session a lot of lobbyists in Tallahassee. There are a lot of hotel rooms and apartments that are filled with lobbyists who are up here to promote a certain purpose. And it's absolutely true that I think too often lobbyists have more influence than the general voter. And that is a system that we have, right? And so I think until we all as citizens educate ourselves a little bit more and start asking lawmakers those tough questions and organize in a way in which lawmakers need to understand that they will get voted out or they won't get voted in if they're going to put special interest needs ahead of the needs of our families, our kids, our public schools, and so on. And that's a true dialogue. You know, I think we have to do that, you know, because most for most lawmakers, money talks, and the average citizen may vote or may not vote for them, but they're not going to necessarily have deep pockets to give the kind of money that some of these special interest groups do.
Let's take one more call. It's Kathleen in Middleburg. Hey, Kathleen. Good morning.
Yes. Good morning.
Go ahead.
I'm a school social worker, and I agree that the school social workers, the psychologists, the school counselors are a safety net for those kids who are unraveling. Yet our legislature in the teacher funding bill will only give that bonus money to teachers who have a classroom. And so if we're saying those extra supports for students are needed, then why aren't we saying that the rest of those people in our school that make up the entire school, why isn't everyone important?
Okay, thanks for your thoughts, Kathleen.
So Kathleen, you're absolutely right. We've actually been trying to amend the bill that deals with the bonuses for teachers. Again, we'd rather see that money go to the base and allow us to actually do salary increases for our teachers and staff in our schools. But Kathleen's absolutely right that not only do they want to invest a lot of money in bonuses, which do nothing to make sure that we fill those 10,000 plus projected vacancies, but they limit the scope of who gets those bonuses, and they leave out a lot of people. As was mentioned, our mental health professionals, our school counselors, our social workers, our psychologists. They also leave out pre-K teachers. They also leave out our intervention teachers who are there to really help kids who are struggling and the like. And so we want to see everyone included in any kind of funding thing that we do because they're all grossly underpaid. And if we're going to address these shortages, if we're going to address this need to have more mental health supports in there, then we absolutely must make sure that we are helping all people in that regard. Money is not always the driving factor for folks, but our pay in Florida has become so low, 46th in the nation out of the 50 states, so low that it is having a huge impact on the fact that we're seeing a lot of vacancies right now.
Andrew Spahr, Vice President of the FEA, you'll be having a news conference in just a little bit in Tallahassee about all this. And so we thank you for getting on the phone with us. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Absolutely, Melissa. Have a great day.
And up next, dining out in Jacksonville and bringing life to those with HIV and AIDS. That's next. We'll be right back.
Florida Prepaid. For 30 years, Florida Prepaid has been helping Florida families save for college. There are college plans for every budget, and prepaid plans are guaranteed by the state of Florida. Open enrollment ends April 30th. Florida Prepaid. Starting is believing.
Sight and Sound Productions. Planning a meeting or conference? Why stress out before the big day? Imagine the freedom to focus your energy and enjoy your hard work. Audio, video, lighting, and peace of mind. SSAV.net.
Hi, it's Robin Young, co-host of Here and Now, Public Radio's live midday news program, now on 89.9 FM WJCT. Join me and Jeremy Hobson beginning Monday, April 29th at 1 p.m. to hear news as it's happening. Timely, in-depth news, interviews, and conversation.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday nights at 9 for Turntable Tuesday, only at the Electro Lounge on 89.9, your community, your world, your music.
Welcome back. Well, this Thursday, you can support an amazing cause here on the First Coast simply by going out to eat. That's because on Thursday, some 20 local restaurants will donate a percentage of their take to the North Florida AIDS Network. It's part of the 14th annual Dining Out for Life event. Paige Kelton and Derek Odom of Action News Jax are spokespersons for Dining Out for Life. And also with us, Stephen Jones from Northeast Florida AIDS Network. They're here to tell us all the delicious details. Hey, guys, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, Stephen, before we talk to our celebrities here in studio, let's start with you. The Northeast Florida AIDS Network is an amazing resource for people in this area with HIV and AIDS. You've been doing Dining Out for Life, gosh, for almost 20 years now in Jacksonville. Right. It's just gotten bigger and bigger every year, right?
Our 14th year. Every year we try to grow the event in some way just to help with the awareness of the event. And it is our big fundraiser event of the year. And we're glad this year, too, to also have HF Pharmacy as our returning title sponsor. And they've been a big support.
Okay. Paige Kelton, Derek Odom, fans of Action News Jax, watch you on the news all the time. Although, Paige, you've transitioned into a senior management role because you're very fancy and very talented. And I'm so in admiration of you always. And so you guys are really kind of the face of this. Tell me about your involvement, Paige. Let's start with you.
I've been involved with not only this effort, Dining Out for Life, but efforts from Northeast Florida AIDS Network. They do such amazing work helping a community. And my station, Action News Jax, is very supportive of efforts to keep our community healthy, because that's what this is all about, really, is keeping people living with HIV healthy. And that's what NFAN does, from providing food to the food insecure to support and a network. And that's what I'm all about.
So, Derek Odom, there are 20 restaurants this Thursday people can go to for lunch or dinner, right? That will help support this effort.
Yeah, it is an amazing list of restaurants we have this year. We always have some of our standbys. Me and Paige will be doing lunch at Fred Cotton's Barbecue. That's a new one in historic Springfield.
Absolutely.
So that's going to be fantastic.
Right on Main Street.
Right there on Main Street. They just moved to that location, so we're excited to have them. And as you see by the list, several restaurants are giving 50% of their take. That is incredible. Like The Garage, The Bearded Buffalo, Carmine's, all-time favorite, and Lola's. So we're really excited about the list we have this year.
You can go to nfanjax.org for the complete list. And these are some of the nicest places in town. BB's, Moss Fire Grill, Black Sheep, Orsay, Biscotti's, as you mentioned, Derek, lots of other popular places like Carmine's Pie House, European Street in San Marcos, Stephen. Mm-hmm. You've got a really nice list, a nice array of foods mm-hmm. people can choose from.
It's a good variety, so there's hopefully something for everybody's taste or pocketbook as far as just choose a place that fits you and take a group to lunch.
And it's such an easy thing to do, Melissa. I mean, a lot of folks, if they're going to go out to lunch, why not choose one of these establishments mm-hmm. and support keeping this community healthy?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, this started as a national thing, didn't it, Stephen? And then the local AIDS network adopted it. This is something that goes on all over the country,
yes,
right?
Yes. The organization just like us, basically in Philadelphia, started this event, and other cities started hearing about it and said, that's like a good event. Hey, we'd like to try it. And so mm-hmm. now between 50 and 60 cities across the U.S. and Canada do Dining Out for Life each year. And all the funds raised in each locality stay local.
Now, you serve more than 10,000 people in our area that live with HIV and AIDS.
Yes.
We have an epidemic here in Duval County. We have one of the highest rates of HIV infection in the country. And so your organization is so important. Can you educate us about what NFAN does?
Yes. Well, the education, too, just besides what we do, just wanted to say, Duval County, we had a 10.5% increase in HIV cases from 2016 to 2017. That's the highest since 2012. And Florida still ranks number 3 in the number of HIV cases behind New York and California. But what we do here, NFAN has case management services for folks that are HIV positive, our in-house food pantry. We have other programs to assist with housing and people's private insurance. Mm-hmm. So we try to meet the needs.
And even though AIDS is no longer an automatic death sentence, it's still a serious disease. And
yes.
I think in recent years, people have thought, well, people can live now with this disease. Mm-hmm. It's a condition they can live with. Maybe I take that off my list of things to support. Can you explain why mm-hmm. that would be a mistake?
All right. Things have changed a lot. Since the mid-90s, we had a lot of improvements in medications, and now HIV has become a chronic illness. There's not the immediate feel that this is maybe a death sentence. You get...
stigma attached to
there
it,
is.
Too.
The a lot stigma of people is feel embarrassed. It's not as bad as it used to be.
These are people like you and I who are HIV positive. Mm-hmm. There are grandmothers, and there are mm-hmm. children, and there are middle-aged folks and folks in their 20s. It impacts a large mm-hmm. section of demographics. It's
right.
not one group.
All right. And every walk of life, you see people all the time. You would never know. People say you can know. You don't know when you meet these people. And that's why the need is so important to keep this mm-hmm. out in the forefront there, because the infections are still going on.
And the education mm-hmm. about how you become infected. And believe it or not, after all these decades, education
still
is still
needed. People still don't realize how easy it is to transmit this
yes.
disease. And then once you are infected, the 3-drug cocktail that can mm-hmm. keep someone healthy is expensive, mm-hmm. right? I mean, if you don't have health insurance, you're not probably going to have access to that cocktail.
Right. And there are programs to assist with that, depending on if you have a financial situation, so that there is definitely assistance out there. If someone isn't aware of where to go, they can always call NFAN or the health department here in Duval County to get that information to get set up. But the big thrust in recent years with the advancements in the medication is more focused on trying to end HIV. And that's actually for our Dining Out for Life event. We said mm-hmm. dine out, end HIV, because hopefully if you've become HIV positive, you'll never get to the AIDS diagnosis if you take those medications
sure.
and stay in care with your doctor.
Sure. And young pregnant women, mm-hmm. that you don't have to transmit HIV on to your baby, but you have to get the treatment needed mm-hmm. in order to prevent that. It's right. not an automatic. There, I mm-hmm. think there's still this idea that young women who are pregnant are just going to pass, you know, transmit it on to their child, and that's not the case.
Right. They've almost stopped that just by young women that are pregnant being in care. The only few that slip through that where they do give birth and pass on the virus is where they were not in care mm-hmm. during their pregnancy.
Yeah, there's so many threads to this, Derek. And as Paige mentioned, education is key because there's still a lot of stigma and shame surrounding HIV and AIDS in terms of people afraid to for whatever reason, don't use protection when they're having sex. People often are hesitant to go and get tested and know their status. That's another issue.
Yeah, that is a big one. And I think it's honestly, the younger generation has come up. They didn't come up like we did with the problem of AIDS when it was a death sentence. It's like something that's treatable, like Stephen said, a chronic illness
fear.
Now.
The fear.
Yeah, the fear is not there, but it's still something very real. And here in Duval County, I know there's 2-3 zip codes that are among the highest in the country. So we definitely need mm-hmm. to keep this in the forefront. And this is an easy event, a great event, a fun event to bring light to a serious topic.
Yeah, dine out and end HIV this week as Jacksonville holds its 14th annual Dining Out for Life event. This is an international fundraising event. Cities all over the world have been doing this for years. And what happens is a restaurant that participates, if you're just tuning in, donates part of their proceeds from the day to the Northeast Florida AIDS Network. I'm going to read the full list again because it's a great list. The Garage, the Phoenix Bar and Bowling, Bearded Buffalo Brewing Company, White Way Deli, Carmine's Pie House, Lola's Burrito Joint, Biscotti's, Athenian Owl, South Kitchen and Spirits, Orsay Black Sheep, Athens Cafe, Nacho Taco, Joseph's Pizza, Fred Cotton's Landmark Barbecue. You can catch Paige and Derek there. Lunchtime on Thursday. Mossfire Grill, BB's M Shack, Pink Salt Restaurant, and European Street in San Marco. Now, if you missed one of those, go to nfanjax.org. Pick your restaurant because these eateries are donating either 25 or 50% of your check on Thursday to Dining Out for Life. So what have I missed, Stephen? Anything?
Sure. Well, something else diners can do when you're at the restaurants. We have our ambassador volunteers that will be there in the aprons that say Dining Out for Life. And they'll have a little giveaway items. Plus, they'll have a raffle envelope. If you'd like to be part of our raffle, they can make a direct donation there. That also adds to our funds for the day. But the big grand prize, those many prizes, but it's a $900 gift prize, $450 gift card for Southwest Air.
Nice.
And $450
wow.
for hotel.com.
And how do you get that prize?
By actually dining out in the restaurant at one of those locations. And I'll look for the folks with the envelopes. They'll have little raffle envelopes. They'll offer you the chance if you'd like to take one of those.
We'll have lots of envelopes. We'll be shaking you for your change.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if people want to get selfies with Derek and Paige, they need to go to Fred Cotton's Barbecue on Main Street at lunchtime on Thursday.
Derek's much more photogenic.
Paige is way too modest, but 11 to 1 on Thursday, it's going to be an awesome event and some great barbecue, too.
All right. Paige Kelton and Derek Odom of Action News, so good to see you. And Stephen Jones, who heads development up for Northeast Florida AIDS Network. It's Dining Out for Life this Thursday, lunch or dinner or both. Go to nfanjax.org, pick your restaurant, and go dine out for life. Everybody, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for your support, Melissa.
And in a moment, why Duval Draft Night is going to the dogs, literally, at TIAA Bank Field. That's coming up next with a dog in studio, too. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Welcome back. Finally this hour, Duval Draft Night is this Thursday, and it's going to the dogs. Yes, literally. The Pet Paradise Park, located inside the bank, TIAA Bank Field, is the NFL's only in-stadium dog park. And this Thursday night, they're going to feature autographs by Jaguars kicker Josh Lambeau and plenty of adorable puppies playing around there, too. It's going to be so cute. Pet Paradise president and CEO Fernando Acosta Rua is here, along with Rosie the Boxer, bringing some doggy fun into the studio. Good morning. Good to see you, Fernando.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Okay. So first of all, let's talk about the fact that you hit upon this genius idea to put an in-stadium dog park inside the Jaguars Stadium, the first of its kind in the NFL. So cool. And it's people love it.
No, it's been a lot of fun. We started it last year, and actually the Jaguars, we were in conversations with them about forming a partnership. They threw out a bunch of ideas, and one of them was this dog park concept. It was almost a joke at the time when they mentioned it, but it really resonated, and we pursued it and built the first of its kind. It was very successful. It was a lot of fun, mm-hmm. and we're in year two this year.
And so when people bring their pet to the dog park, it's like any dog park, really. What all, for people that have never seen it, what can they expect?
So it's about 1,500 square feet. It's artificial turf, has a swimming pool, elevated swimming pool. So it really does have that feel of our dog parks at Pet Paradise, but obviously at a smaller level. We have a lot of shading. We have a veterinarian on staff. We have plenty of caretakers there to make sure that everything's safe and fun. So it really is a miniature Pet Paradise experience at the stadium.
How do the dogs take to it? Are they freaked out by all the noise and lights and people, or is it exciting for them? Does it depend on the dog?
It totally depends on the dog, and that's a good point, because we want to make sure that it's appropriate for the dogs when they come there. It's not for all the dogs. Some dogs prefer, just like humans, to stay home on the couch and watch the game. But a lot of the dogs really feed off that energy. You can see that they love the excitement. They love all the people around, and they really take to it. So we do an assessment at Pet Paradise prior to any dogs coming to the park. So we want to make sure that they're appropriate and safe for that environment.
Sure. And of course, this Thursday is the NFL draft, big draft night at the stadium. You're taking part in all the action by having a special event. Jaguars kicker Josh Lambeau, who recently re-signed with the team and has a lot of fans, he's going to be at Pet Paradise signing autographs.
He is. And his dog, Lana, is going to be there as well. So Josh has been a great friend of Pet Paradise and a great person for us. And he's brought Lana, who was actually, he found Lana next to the stadium.
Really?
Homeless dog there, and took her in. And now she's enjoying game days at the stadium, frolicking in the pool, watching her dad kick field goals. So it's a Cinderella story for Lana. So Josh will be there signing autographs from 6:30 to 7:30 at Pet Paradise Park in the stadium.
You're going to have lots of other puppies playing, but people should not bring their own pets this Thursday, right?
That's correct. Please don't bring your pet. Like I mentioned, we want to make sure that the dogs are compatible. It's a safe environment. For that to happen, they need to come by Pet Paradise and make sure that their dog is appropriate for that setting. So we're going to have some of the players' dogs and also some customers, some Pet Paradise dogs there as well that we know have done well in that environment.
Now, Lambeau will be signing autographs, as you said, and at the same time, it's a draft party. People can watch the NFL Network coverage of the first round of the NFL draft in Daly's Place. That starts at 8 o'clock. The Jaguars currently hold the 7th overall selection in the 2019 NFL draft. So there will be fun all over the place in the sports complex Thursday night.
No, that's correct. And they expect somewhere between 10 and 15,000 people. I think there's a lot of excitement with a lot of the things that went on during the offseason with Nick Foles and some of the additions. So there's going to be a lot of excitement to see who the Jags pick with the 7th pick, or do they trade it, or who knows? So it'll be a lot of fun.
Now, this is free, but you want people to register, Fernando. How can they do that?
Yeah, so they need to register and go to the Jaguars site. It is free, but you have to go over there, and you'll have a digital ticket that'll be sent to your phone, and just bring that to get in. So you can go to the Jaguars.com, and there is a place there where they can get the download.
Get your free ticket for Pet Paradise and an autograph signing with Josh Lambeau and his dog. and lots of other dogs. A really fun part of draft night this Thursday night. Pet Paradise president and CEO Fernando Acosta Rua and Rosie the Boxer also here. And she's been really good this whole time, sitting so quietly. Fernando, thanks for joining us. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And that's our show. Thanks for listening. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum is our director. We always want your feedback. Send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. 1A is up next, and on tomorrow's show, women aging into poverty and how to prevent it. That's tomorrow. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.